Okay, well, today I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things going on in France. Seems like the people are quite upset about this new carbon tax or whatever the French government is doing to the people. And this is what happens when people allow their government to grow out of control. And the same thing that's happening here with some of these red flag laws and stuff like that, that they just incrementally creep in and creep in and creep in, and then eventually something happens. Now, in France, the people are just flat out revolting. They're burning stuff up, and they don't have a lot of options for them because they've been disarmed over all the years, and everything's going on and going crazy as usual. So if you do a Google search, here's all kinds of information on the French riots. And everyone's, you know, anti-Macron, the president of France, because he's obviously, I don't know, an idiot or a socialist. And the riots, from a viewer's point of view, probably look like, what the heck's going on in France? What's wrong with those people? But they're not being allowed a voice within their government. And so the government has been allowing immigrants and migrants to just come flooding into the country. Same thing's going on in Switzerland and stuff, where women are now being raped by these Muslim immigrants. And no one can do anything about it. There's no go zones with some of these areas, and the police just stay out. And so in France, same things are happening. The things are being done by the government that are not representative of the people. And maybe they've been set up that way for a long time, but the reality is eventually there's a boiling point. People get upset and they have to get a regress of issues, or is it redress of issues that are bothering them. And in America, we have a few more ways of doing that, but in France and other countries, they don't. So eventually they just start rioting. And we've seen that in America, where people feel that they are being abused or taken advantage of. Police departments are not being concerned about issues, and so the people riot. And it's not always a bad thing. I mean, you could say the Civil War was a riot. The Revolutionary War was a riot, because people in the country did not feel like their point of view was being listened to. Doesn't mean they're right, but eventually even a child will throw a temper tantrum and get upset and get mad. And a lot of times when you ask them, what's really wrong? Why are you throwing this temper tantrum? They'll say, well, you know, so-and-so did this, or there's a bug in my orange juice. So there's a legitimate reason. Is it worth a catastrophe? No, it's not. But to that person or those people, it is. And if you ignore them long enough, eventually they will lash out. It's human nature to get to a point to where if reason and common sense and communications are failing, then you're going to get mad. In some countries, they have no other option but to burn stuff down. They don't have guns. They can't go take over something and say, hey, listen up. And I'm not saying guns and violence is the way to do it. But sometimes when your country is at stake, like in the Revolutionary War with England and our founding fathers, it came down to that. So talk is cheap and writing letters is nice and sending a Declaration of Independence is cute and all that. But eventually the people in power just say, no, sorry, we're ignoring you. And it creates an atmosphere that fosters violence as a reaction to something that the people in France feel they have no other recourse. And we see that happen in America a lot also, where people just get so dang frustrated that a riot breaks out because they're being ignored. Now, in America, we have options. We should have representation with our Congress, but we've talked about that before. Congress is a joke, and our representatives, because of gerrymandering, don't represent our community. It represents five or six disjointed and maybe have different value structure than your community. So they've messed that all up. And then it just continues to escalate and snowball until you find yourself with representation as prescribed by the Constitution, but that person doesn't really represent your voting district. And we talked about that last time. And so how do you get control of it? We don't want to see these kinds of riots in America, you know, when they can be avoided. And can they be avoided? I think they can. But our leaders seem to be, I don't know, playing the fiddle while America burns. And they just don't seem to care. I mean, they literally don't give a darn. And there's other words that I could put in there for that, but they don't care. So that's what's going on in France. And you look over here in America and you see these red flag laws, which I think is appropriately named, you know, because a red flag usually represents communist China. But what they're saying is, hey, there's a red flag here. We should check it out. We should do something about it. Now, normally it has to do with taking away a person's guns and having your gun rights just stripped from you based on an allegation. There's no due process. So to me, from what I've learned from watching a lot of the videos by Chris Ann Hall, who's a constitutional lawyer, you know, tries to explain that without a crime, you can't do that. You can't have a warrant unless there's been a crime. But these police chiefs and stuff will just go enforce the warrant put out by the judge or an order to go take someone's guns. One guy was shot. And eventually this will escalate because a lot of the states that are doing this are probably mealy-mouthed liberal states anyway that think guns are bad and you shouldn't read the Bible either. But once it starts matriculating or metastasizing into states where people are going to put up more than just an argument with a law enforcement officer, what's happening is judges are issuing these orders to go take away people's guns based on a hearsay allegation. You know, my neighbor says, I think Mark is dangerous. He goes to a judge almost like a order of protection, or what do they call that? A restraining order. There's no evidence. There's no case. They're sealed. And therefore, you don't know who made this allegation that you're dangerous and you're a threat. But the judge issues an order based on these red flag laws. And then the police show up. And in some states, people are just like, oh, well, you know, I'll take it to court and I'll get my due diligence and blah, blah, blah. And I'll get my day in court. But that doesn't always happen. So you have to go to court and prove you're innocent. And it should be the other way around. So these are no different than a restraining order where somebody can get a restraining order on you just because they feel that maybe someday you might hurt them based on your attitude toward them. But you've never threatened them because that would be a crime. See, that's a crime of assault. Even though it's verbal, you threaten to kill somebody, then yes, they can call the police and say, this guy just threatened to kill me, and he drew a gun. Now you have maybe a case to disarm that person through due process. But if I just go walking into the courtroom and say, Your Honor, my neighbor is scary, and I'm worried, and he has a gun, or lots of guns, and I think he's a radical, one of those crazy people. If the judge grants that order, the police will show up at his house. Well, what if that guy, he's not dangerous, but he's not just going to submit his Second Amendment over to some unconstitutional law and some order that denies him due process. So then technically, what if the police, you know, draw their weapons because now you're arguing with them and that kind of proves that you're violent even though you're not? But you have a right to defend your property, and your guns are your property. These are yours. You paid for them. That's your property, and you have a right to life, liberty, and property. So the cops in some states have shot people because of these altercations. Well, the judge has put that person and his life at jeopardy by sending armed police officers over there to take away his guns, which he has every constitutional right to own. Now, what if the guy happens to be a little bit quicker and he has some friends there, and all of a sudden they draw down on the police and the police get shot? Well, now you as a citizen are in trouble for shooting police officers, and all you were doing was defending, once again, your constitutional right. And who should be at fault? That should be the judge and the Congress and the Senate and every bureaucratic legislature that allowed this law, this red flag law, to be enacted. It puts the community at risk by sending officers of the law to someone's house that may be better armed and tactically trained than the police officers, and someone could get hurt. And then all of a sudden, they're going to default back to, well, if he would have just gave us his guns, this wouldn't have happened. See, the order was just because he's violent. Good thing we showed up. That is BS. So we're seeing these things take shape all around the world and in America with these red flag laws and so many other things. And that is why I harp on it so dang much, that if you don't get involved locally and start getting control of your representatives, you will lose your county, you will lose your state, and you will lose your government and all of your rights. And you'll just wake up going, oh, I guess now I'm just a plebe and I should just shut up, go to work, give most of my money to the government and mind my own business and just be thankful that the lights are on and fall back on that default stupid answer or statement. Well, you know, I've been in other countries and still this is better than most third world countries. Well, at that point, no, it is not. We just have, I don't know, more shiny objects to look at. And I guess that makes America better. If we allow this to happen, is America better than some of those other countries? No, we're the same as, and maybe worse than some of those countries that people always go, well, you know, I've been over there and America's still the best. That's an old, old expression from a long, long time ago. It's not that way anymore. It's changed. It's different. It's become screwed up. And so every day we make another incremental step towards something that is bad. And once we fall into that trap of government taking care of us from womb to tomb and taking all of our money and taking all of our rights, then we are no better than a third world banana republic. And the only difference is we have nicer infrastructure and prettier buildings, but that won't last long either, because you look at Venezuela, it went from a nice looking economy to socialism, and now it's a crap hole. The buildings are all sprayed with graffiti. It looks like a third world banana republic. The difference is they have stucco on the walls instead of grass huts. But there's no difference other than that. The people have no rights. They have no liberty. They have no constitutional freedom. And so therefore they don't work because they have no incentive. The rewards do not justify or work in conjunction with the effort we put into it. So we're being robbed and stripped of everything. And eventually, as all these things roll on, someone in America, some state, some cities will have riots, just like in France, because the government stopped listening to the people years ago. And I think they want that in Washington. You know, I really do. I think a collapse would be good for them because now they don't have to run for office. They just appoint themselves kings. So we need to be on guard. And we need to pay attention because today it's red flag laws. It's planning and zoning. It's, you know, carbon taxes. It's increase in income tax. It's an increase in state income tax. It's an increase in property tax. It's another bond election. It's another thing that just incrementally picks your pocket one penny at a time until that $20 bill you thought was in there when you go to use it is gone. It's been taken. It doesn't have to be big things. In fact, it will be the little things that will incrementally build up into a series of events that in history they'll go, well, you know what happened? way back in the day, they allowed this, and they'll be looking at it in retrospect and saying, well, now we can see the collapse of America because of all these things. But when you're living in it, you don't see it. You're too close. But eventually you'll reach in your pocket to get that $20 bill and it'll be gone. And you'll think that you have freedom and you don't. It'll be gone. And you'll think that you have the right to protest and go out and exercise your free speech and go to the town square and have a redress of issues, and you won't be able to. You'll think that you can call the police and have a peace officer show up, and he won't. He'll be a law enforcement officer that will probably beat you down, cuff you, and stuff you for talking back to him. You'll think that you can call your sheriff, and your sheriff, well, he's the good guy. He's the one that protects your rights. And no, he won't be able to either, because they've allowed their authority to be circumvented and marginalized. And you see it all over the country where these sheriffs just, they're non-existent. Something happens and you see the police chief and the mayor and the FBI all on the news. Where's the chief of police? You know, well, he's out there grandstanding and shaking hands with some big shot from the FBI, because we're working on this and we're trying to figure out what happened here, which they won't. And meanwhile, where's your sheriff? Well, maybe he's out solving real crimes, but I think they've just allowed them to become marginalized. And I think sheriff's departments are allowing themselves to get that way and to get marginalized because they don't want to put forth the effort to go out in front of the press and explain what's really going on. And so they just take a back seat. Well, Congress has been taking a back seat to the way this government runs for 50 years now. And look who's in charge, the Senate and the president. The Senate and the president are not elected to be in charge. The Congress is elected to be in charge of the purse strings, the checkbook, and how our government runs. But see, that is gone too. And we could go down and down and down the list. But if you read the Declaration of Independence and you read the statements that are in there about why they want to break away from England, every one of those points you can find happening in America in spades. So it's a mess. And you look at what's going on in France, and that's what will be going on here. Those people are upset, justifiably upset, because they've already been robbed, pickpocketed, and screwed long enough. And now they got all these immigrants just walking across the border like, hey, give me all your money too, and getting away with it. And now they're initiating these carbon taxes, and they're like, okay, enough's enough, because quite frankly, I'm broke. I can't even pay the rent on my flat or my crappy little apartment because you guys have robbed me so bad. And now what am I supposed to do? And sure, they'll show pictures of France, like how good the economy is. And oh, look over here. And oh, look over there. Those are the rich people, the upper middle class and the upper class that have all this money that they show on the news. But the real people, the you and me, the man on the street, the woman on the street, the middle class that used to make up a society with values and core beliefs and work ethics, they're gone. They're bankrupt. They're on welfare, just like in America. So you can sit there and tell me, Mark, you're wrong. You're looking at this all wrong. But no, I'm not. And everyone knows it. Trump knew it and he said it. And that's why he got elected, because he pointed out things that people didn't want to hear on the left. But us people on the right, we were dying to hear it. We loved hearing it, and it got him elected. But this midterm has shown that even though his support is still really rock solid, as a nation, our belief structure and what we understand of that election was, it wasn't just about Trump and saying the things he said that got us riled up. You look at the midterm, and the House is now controlled by liberals. And it's not like it was controlled by the liberals 50 years ago, because it always, you know, went up and down as far as who is in control. But now you look at the message of the Democrats, and they're coming right out and saying social justice, welfare, socialism, anarchy, Antifa, all this stuff. And they got elected on that message. So it is different than 20 years ago when the House was controlled by the Democrats. Because Democrats were more conservative than Republicans are today, but only 30 years ago. But They've changed, and so have the Republicans. So the whole ship has shifted to the left. Everyone on both sides of the deck are now heading left, and we need to see it, and we don't see it. Just look at the elections. Look at your local elections and see what's going on. And go, who the heck elected that guy? Well, your neighbor did. Maybe you didn't vote for that crazy left-wing loon that's running your city council or something, but someone in your town did, and it's probably 51%+ of your neighbors that said, hey, I like that loon. What are you talking about? So we need to get a grip on things of what's going on, and we're just asleep. And it's not that we're asleep because we're apathetic. We're asleep because we're overworked and underpaid and taxed to death. And so we don't have time to drill down on issues and figure out what's going on. You know, sure, they send you a little pamphlet and go, here's the issues you're voting on. And you don't have time to read them. And then they're written in doublespeak. So you almost have to look at who signed all these letters for and against this, you know, issue, the ballot elective or whatever's there, the proposition. And usually if I see groups like the Sahara Club and the crazy loons on the left and mayors against guns, if they're for it, I'm against it. I don't really need to know much more than that. I just wish they had just stopped having special elections and all these propositions and amendments and things being added on all the time. But since they're not going to, well, if you can't figure out if it's a good idea or not, then just read who supports that idea. And if they're part of the left-wing loon society, then that tells you, I don't think I want that, because they do, and they're crazy. All right, so I'm going to take a quick break, and we will be back to talk about maybe something sane instead of all this crazy anarchy. Black Metal Firearms are a couple guys I know personally and friends of mine that put together some great accessories for all your firearms needs. Everything that I've seen them do is just top-notch and very nice looking. BlackMetalFirearms.com. Check them out. I think you'll be glad you did. Go to Facebook, Black Metal Firearms. They got a great page there too. Learn more about the workmanship and the craftsmanship they put into every accessory and every build they do. Well, I'm back, and we just ranted on about some of the rioting and craziness going on in France and maybe what we can do to avoid having that happen in America. But on a programming note, John from Contra Radio Network asked me to talk more about prepping and patriotism, and his show is going to be more on the bigger issues, like what government agencies are planning on robbing you this week. Then don't forget Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher from Prepping 2.0. Now, Glenn Tate wrote the 299 Days series, excellent series of books. I read the first one and I was hooked and just kept on going and going and going and got through the whole series. And each book, I think there's 9 of them or 10 of them. I don't have that right in front of me. Each book was just pulled me right in and kept me going. I was fascinated by it. And then Shelby Gallagher, she's writing a series, The Great State. And the first book was The Divide. And it's just awesomely written. The characters really got to me quickly, which I like when I'm listening to an audiobook, because if it starts to drag out or I don't like the characters, then I really don't care if they survive the apocalypse or not, because they're stupid. But that's Prepping 2.0. So that's the lineup. There's me, the John Jeffers Report, and Prepping 2.0. And all really good. I'm kind of a scatterbrain, but everyone else is pretty good at what they do. I'm the anomaly. So when it comes to prepping, that's my job to talk about prepping. And I've gotten a lot of grief over the years because I'm not tactically trained. I haven't written all these books on prepping. I don't make thousands of videos on prepping. I'm just a guy that studies being prepared. And that's why I don't do all those things, because I'm busy. I have a life and a job, and I raise family and, you know, that was my focus for years and years and years and years. And if you have kids, you understand. Your focus may be on finishing that hot rod in the garage or restoring that old four-wheel drive classic that you got sitting out there. But the reality is your focus and the demand of your time is your kids and their soccer and their this and their that. So I didn't have a lot of time to do that. But over the course of taking my family camping and doing outings and stuff, I learned their needs and what they needed to get by. You know, if you're out camping and you have a child that goes into anaphylactic shock because they get stung by a bee, you learn that real quick while you're out camping. The beautiful thing about being out camping is you can get in your car and take your child to a hospital. Or if you have an EpiPen, you know, maybe you got a second mortgage on your house to buy a couple of those, then you learn those things. And that is what being prepared is. I think prepping has become more of a pastime where people stock up on gear and beans, Band-Aids, and bullets. And I'm even thinking of starting a podcast with one of my friends, maybe calling it Gear Gushers or something like that, because you talk to some of these people and they're frothing at the mouth. They're just so, Mark, you got to see this new gun I bought. It's got this and it's got that and it's ooh, ooh. And now I'm really prepared. And it's like, yeah, you're prepared to have a really cool gun, but if you had to bug out, you're only going to be able to grab a few things. And, you know, that'll be your favorite, most favorite, bestest handgun, you know, maybe a couple rifles and some ammo and food and gear and leave. You know, you might not be able to grab that gun you just had a heart attack over buying. You're like, oh, it's so awesome. You know, it's got this rail on it and I got all these lasers and thermal imaging and it's just, oh, God, I need another one. So that is the prepping mindset as far as it being a lifestyle. But to be prepared is totally different. You do have to have gear and you do have to have stuff. But I break it down into different piles. You know, the prepper community's got beans, Band-Aids, and bullets, which makes sense. That's your food, your first aid, and your ammunition. Kind of limited, you know, three piles. But I kind of look at prepping as a process. If you're thinking of going into being prepared and as far as prepping for a bad future, which we just talked about could happen, first of all, you need to understand your family needs or your needs if you're not in a family. And what will happen, let's say, if the lights went out right now? If you have children, then what would you do? If it's just you as a single person, what would you do? If you have a group of friends that you call your team or your posse, what would you do? And then you can kind of look at that direction and go, okay, it's just me and my spouse. So we're going to start heading up this big staircase called being prepared. So you take the first step and you go, I've made the decision to be prepared. So in a bug out situation or the end of the world, basically you're on a camp trip where you're not at home and you don't have all your stuff and there's no electricity. So go camping a lot. And once you get that down, then you learn your needs of your team or your family or yourself, your spouse and yourself, whatever. And you go, these are the things we need to be comfortable when we're out, whether we're camping or it's the end of the world. So you learn to light fires, you learn to get water, you learn to trap, you know, whatever it is, or you bring enough food and you learn to have enough for 3 days for a camp trip or an emergency situation, you know, shelter, stuff like that. You might have a tent, but you learn the basics. Okay, so now you're on that first step and you're like, okay, I need to step it up. I need to take a step up. So what kind of food in a long-term situation am I going to need? And what will be my diet? Because see, when you pick a diet, that will determine your next step up, whether you go left down that hall or right down that hallway. So if you're going to be gardening and you're going to be plant-based diet and grains and stuff like that, then the gear that you're going to need is pretty much 180 degrees different than the gear you're going to need if you're going to be on a meat-based diet, because you're going to be hunting, trapping, fishing. So they're not mutually exclusive. I mean, if you're on a meat diet, you might still want to learn to forage for certain plants that you can eat, tubers, you know, cattails, whatever. But your primary food source, 90% or more, will be meat-based diet. Then you're going to need hunting skills and trapping skills and fishing skills, hunting gear, hunting, you know, ammunition and guns, or trapping gear and traps, and learning how to make, you know, deadfalls and all that, fishing gear, fishing bait. So it takes you down that hallway. If you're going to be gardening and plant-based diet, then there's land issues. So, you know, where are you going to grow this food? How are you going to do it? Are you going to need a greenhouse, or are you just going to, you know, try to take enough to make it through the first winter, and then hopefully by the second winter you can start planting and stuff? Then that requires, you know, a plot of land, or working with another prepper that thinks the same way, where you guys go in on land and security and all that for your garden, greenhousing. But the gear you're going to need is more farming gear. You might need a diesel-powered tractor, or you might need to start raising mules or oxen and getting some older equipment that can be drawn that way. Let's say it's an EMP and it just fries everything. And for the first year or two, until you find a working tractor or something, or an old one, you might have to do it old school. So what kind of, you know, hose and shovels and tools and water supply will you need? You'll probably need end-to-end water through the property, you know, to where it's a creek or a stream where you can dam it up a little higher and irrigate with it, you know, so you're not just trucking around buckets of water and stuff. So once you figure out your nutritional needs, your diet, and what you're going to eat, primarily one or the other, it's, you know, mostly you're going to be a plant-based diet kind of person, where you're going to want grains and all that, and fruits and vegetables. Then you're going to need to grow trees. But if you're going to be meat, then it'll be primarily meat-based. So that helps you determine which direction you step up on the next level. So you say, I'm going to be plant-based. Okay, then you move over that direction and you decide, you know, this is what I need to do. I need to find land. I need to do these things that to where I can grow food. I'm going to be meat-based. So I need to learn to hunt, and I need, you know, guns and stuff like that, or archery equipment or fishing equipment or all of the above. So that helps you move that direction without becoming confused, because if you know for a fact that primarily you're going to be eating a meat-based diet, then don't join groups and stuff on Facebook and stuff like that that's talking about gardening or homesteading, because it's totally different. You can do that. You can learn as much as you can learn, because the brain has a big hard drive that can handle a lot of information. But it can become confusing to where the lines start getting blurred and you're like, oh, look at that. We need that. That's a really cool rototiller. And it's like, well, do you need a rototiller, or do you need some canterbury traps, or do you need, you know, line for trapping, or do you need fishing poles and fishing gear? Do you need a canoe or something you can use for fishing? So don't go over there and start mixing the flavors, because, you know, when you're first starting out, it can become confusing. If you're going to be plant-based and you might just need a gun or two for protection, then you don't need to be learning about other types of hunting ammunition, scopes, and all that, because that's not going to be your primary objective. Your primary objective will be feeding yourself. And so if you're a farmer, then the land, the water, the irrigation, all of those things that you need to know are over there on that side of the fence. If you're going to be hunting, then everything's on that side of the fence. So you kind of got to figure out which way you're walking. And it's easy with so many groups and pages and forums and just information out there to where if you don't have a set defined diet and what kind of gear you need for that diet, you could end up being confused and buying all the gear for both, which is going to bankrupt you. So when you're starting out, really figure those things out. Go, yes, I'm going to be a prepper. And yes, I'm going to move up that first step and then figure out your diet and how to make a shelter and how to gather water when you're on the run for the first 3 days or 3 weeks. But that you learn while camping. And then you learn how to camp quietly, how to, you know, have meals without a fire and all these things to where you can be in stealth quiet mode. But once you start moving up, then you go, okay, let's say the world ends. What am I going to eat long term? Because that's the key. Long term, the world's not going to end the way we think it's going to end. It's going to come up and just surprise. It's going to end a whole different way than most people think. And you might not have freedom to go here or go there. You might wake up one day and they've already mass confiscation of guns. And now the time to fight is too late. You might have to just grab a few things and go. You don't know. So you want to be prepared for camping, hardcore camping. You don't have to be a bushcraft kind of guy. You just need basic camping equipment. Two is one and one is none. So I would have extras of everything. And then you perfect your skills, and then you perfect your diet and your nutritional needs and the way you're going to feed yourself or your family or your team. And then you get that gear and you preposition it or whatever you got to do. And then you can start perfecting your skills and your mindset on that side of the aisle, because now you're going to be plant-based. You're a farmer. You're a homesteader. How do you gather water? How do you build irrigation and rain catchment systems without being able to run to Home Depot?
Contra radio listeners, this is Randy from Bulldog Custom Gun Leather. I've been building the finest custom leather holsters that many can buy for the past 12 years. I'm a retired 35-year veteran police officer and have carried a concealed firearm daily for the past 42 years. I know what works and what doesn't work for the safe and comfortable carrying of concealed firearms. I use only the finest premium cowhide tanned in the USA. Bulldog Custom Gun Leather is not a large holster manufacturer and never will be. All my holsters are handcrafted one at a time by me in my shop located in Fort Smith, Arkansas. My website address is www.bulldogleathercompany.com. That's bulldogleathercompany.com. Mention Contra Radio and receive a 10% discount on your order. Thanks.
Shelby Gallagher here, letting you know the second book in my book series, A Great State, is set for release on October 28th. Book 2, The Aftermath, is a continuation of the story from The Divide, where our main character, Julie, a single mother, preps for a collapse. Her story is one of overcoming, strength, and prepping as her community crumbles around her. Sound like recent headlines? Book 2 continues the story with tragic details of what life will be like for those who don't prepare. Pre-order your copy now at my website, agreatstate.com.
Then you start perfecting that, learning ways to do those things, old school, the way, you know, farmers did 50 to 75 or 100 years ago. But if you're going to be meat-based, then you need to perfect those skills. Yes, the beauty is we have, you know, nice rifles now, but what if that's gone? You know, can you trap? Can you trap like the mountain men did 50, 100 years ago? And then you perfect those skills. And then really, you've really just taken a couple steps up and moved one way or the other, and now you're perfecting those things. And then you go, oh, I've got this down. No matter how the world ends, if you can get away from the chaos and you can get out of Dodge, basically, and get somewhere safe and ride out the crap storm that comes, whichever way the world ends, then you should be fine. Whether you're in a high desert or a low desert, in the mountains or in Alaska, you can survive. You can do those things you have to do to stay alive. So it's really, really, really kind of easy as far as being prepared. The hard part is getting your mindset around preparation and not falling into that kind of psychobabble trap or whatever it is when people go, oh, you're a prepper. What do you think, the zombies are going to attack? Oh, what do you think, the economy's really going to collapse? Never has happened in America, you know, and it's like, no, I just think something bad could happen. There could be a massive solar flare. We've dodged a few of them over the last even 50 years that if it would have been just a few minutes later when the sun burped, we would have been having another Compton event, you know, like in the 1800s. There could be a hurricane. There could be massive fires. There could be riots in conjunction with. I read a really good audiobook. I don't read it. I just say I read because it sounds better than I listen to. A really good audiobook called Outliers. And in one of the chapters, he's talking about plane crashes and what happened to Korean Air years ago when they just started having accident after accident after accident. And finally, Korean Air did turn it around 180 degrees, and now they're doing really great. And how they did that is totally different to what I'm talking about, because that was more on a business level. But what he talks about is any air traffic or safety, you know, what do they call that? The safety, whatever, and NATS, or I don't know what the hell they're called. They will say that every plane crash is always a series of events. It's not one thing. It's just a thing, you know, that where they're landing, you know, the light that shines to get them, you know, on runway, to where if it's rainy or something, their instrumentation can be screwing up and all that. But, one of the Korean Air crashes, that light, and I'm sorry, I can't think of what it was called, wasn't working. And then most airports, you know, they have the signal, the beacon, you know, that kind of guides them in near the airport. So, you know, when you follow it, you end up going, oh, there's the airport. Some of them are not right at the airport. They could be miles away on the side of a mountain, which was what happened to that North Korean Airlines. And then there were, you know, just five or six things to where things weren't communicated right. The light wasn't working. The beacon was on the side of a mountain. It was raining. And, so any one of those things, a pilot would just go, oh, I don't need that light. It's okay. I can figure it out. Well, I don't need that beacon because I see your lights because it's not raining. Most pilots could pretty much wing it and land with three or four of those problems. But when they just come all at one time in succession, it ends up in a plane crash. And they say, statistically, all plane crashes are a series of events. So that's what, you know, I think will happen to America. It won't be a zombie plague. It would be fun, but it probably won't be. It'll be, you know, the markets are doing bad, but France is having riots and their people aren't happy. And the World Bank is doing something, and George Soros got a bug up his butt, and he's trying to ruin America with these invading, you know, families from Mexico and all these things. And it just slowly puts a strain on the system. But there's always that defining point, that one thing, that breaking point that triggers it all. And so you got this happening there and something else happening somewhere else and something happening over here and somebody doing this and someone not paying attention to the economy. And then all of a sudden, one last thing, the straw that broke the camel's back, and that must be where that expression comes from. You know, it wasn't all the hay they had on the camel's back. It was just that one last straw. It was just one too many. And so that's how I see things happening in a Teotihuacan or crap hits the fan kind of event. It won't be, oh, that one thing that historians will point back on and go, oh, well, you know, if that wouldn't have happened, they would have been fine. historians will look back and go, well, you know what really happened was that solar flare, it only blacked out, you know, 30% of the country. And they should have been okay with that. But there was a computer hack virus going on that was really messing with their grid anyway. And then they had these other issues over here. And then so-and-so was doing this. And so once the grid went down in that area, it cascaded to other areas. And before they could hit the reset button, people were in the dark going, what's going on? And then jumping to conclusions going, holy crap, it's the invaders. You know, it's that invading force from Mexico. Holy crap, it's the economy and they're trying to steal my money. And that 3 days or a week of uncertainty and not having the information that you need right then causes this trigger effect to just cascade across the land. And whether they hit reset and get the lights turned back on or not is irrelevant at that point, because there's without rule of law, there's chaos, there's people panicking. Your neighbor is freaking out for some reason that you didn't even know that guy had a gun, and you didn't know he hated you. But all of a sudden, he's calling you the problem because whatever's going on, and you don't even know what's going on. You're like, holy crap, dude, I don't even know what you're talking about. It's like, yeah, right. This is your company that you work with. You voted for Trump or whoever's in president at the time. And then all of a sudden, you know, your neighbor's trying to kill you. But that's okay because you can't call your other neighbor because he's being shot by, you know, some other enemy that, you know, just popped up. And it just snowballs and it gets crazier and weirder and crazier and weirder. And pretty soon, it's overload. The police are trying to keep rule of law, but things are going, you know, crazy. You know, there's all these red flag laws and Black Lives Matter are pissed off. So the police are pretty much neutered now, because if they go into this neighborhood, they're accused of racist. If they go into that neighborhood, you know, all those people are armed and just shooting cops for trying to steal their guns, and they go over there. So eventually the police just go, you know what? The governor's been telling me to stand down and the mayor for a year now. I think I'm just going to stay home and take care of my family. And so then that falls down. The lineman that would kind of normally go fix the power transformer that blew up on, you know, your telephone pole outside your house that provides power to you and maybe four or five other houses, it's on fire, but he can't start his truck because that EMP thing. Or if he gets to his truck, it's been stripped and looted. Or if he gets to his truck or close to his truck, he gets shot by a crazy man that's like, it's all your fault. And so eventually things just don't get done and then don't get done. And then someone doesn't show up for work and something else happens. And we run on a just-in-time inventory. So all of a sudden, you know, the truck drivers is like, I'm not going there. Those people are crazy. You know, my buddy was driving, you know, a bunch of food to, you know, the Walmart there, and he got robbed and shot on the side of the road, and they stole his truck, and there's not a cop or a highway patrol within miles to do anything about it. So I'm not going. In fact, I'm going to keep that truck in my garage, and I'm going to eat that food myself. And so then somebody, you know, tries to send someone over to the power plant to get another transformer, and his key card doesn't work because, you know, the power's out. And he doesn't have the old manual key because Bob had that. You know, he's the maintenance guy. Let's go to Bob's. So they got to walk to Bob's. On the way to Bob's, something happens. They get arrested for walking or whatever after curfew. All these little things just break down and break down and break down and break down. And you would think as a civilized society, we would be able to go, whoa, wait a minute. This is getting bad. What are we going to do about it? Let's regroup here. But no, we're not a civilized society. It's a very thin layer that keeps us all within, you know, that sphere of non-craziness. But you break that little veil, and all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. Your neighbor's not a nice guy, or your neighbor used to be a nice guy, but all of a sudden, something happened to his kid on the way home from school because the damn lights were out. And it's Bob down the street's fault because he works for that stupid power company. And I'm going to go over and show him. And you can kind of see this. I mean, we've seen movies all the time where things like this happen. And we're like, That's so stupid. Yeah, because we're watching the movie and we know Bob didn't really do it. But in the real world, we freak out. Our kids haven't eaten. Our kids can't come home from school because they're still on lockdown. And we can't get there because our car won't start. And it's a 4-hour walk over there and there's rioting and stuff. So now you're panicking, or your kids are home, but you haven't been able to feed them because everyone's only got, like, I don't know, 3 meals in their house at any given moment. So you can't get to the store. You tried to go to the store, but that was being looted because everyone was freaking out. So then the police that were left shut the store down so it didn't get looted. You can't go get food. Your ATM card doesn't work. And now you're freaking out because your kids are starving and they haven't eaten for a couple of days. What does that do to you? And then all of a sudden your neighbor comes over and starts giving you crap or asking stupid questions. And you're like, dude, what do I know? My kids are starving. And then, if you'd have been a prepper, you wouldn't be starving. It's like, oh yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for reminding me. So you shoot your neighbor because you know he's got food, but you happen to be that guy that gets shot because you opened your big mouth because you were too cocky to keep it closed. Do you see what I'm talking about? Hopefully you understand that it's, you know, all the experts say if there was an EMP that we could protect against that. We would get these things up and running. As if they can even get things up and running within a week when a branch falls over on a power line somewhere over there. And now it blacks out and destroys super transformers. And they go, it'll be okay. We can replace them. That one was in a Faraday cage. Yeah, well, my power lines are on fire, dude. It took them a year to get those power lines pulled into my neighborhood. And now they're on fire and all the transformers are burning the poles they're setting on. So what are you going to do about that? And I go, oh, well, we can't get to you for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. So it cascades. So when I talk about being prepared, it's not because I'm paranoid about one thing. It's just any one thing can cause that chaos, that breakdown of just-in-time inventory, whether it's an economic collapse or transportation collapse that brings all of our food to us. It could be one or two things that lead up to a bunch of other little things, and then boom, the bottom falls out. It's that quick. And you're like, wow, didn't see that coming. No, we never do see a house of cards fall apart. You're just like, that was awesome. But you don't see which one slid out from under it first, do you? Unless you're really, really watching, or you filmed it, and then you can be a historian and go, see that card at the bottom? Yeah, it slipped, and then the house of cards fell down. But that's for historians. For us in the present, we need to be prepared. That's all I can say to it. It's not that I'm paranoid. I just see things in a real way. I've seen people go crazy for no dang reason. I've seen people that love each other fight. And I've seen on the news where people that loved each other for years kill each other. And you're like, what the heck is wrong with that? And so you have to look at it realistic. I mean, we all love the kumbaya effect. And we all think that we're all just really good people. And I hear it on the news all the time. Well, most Americans are really good people. Yeah, we are, right up until we're not. And so anything can trigger something. And there's a lot of anythings out there because we've been made into a very complex society. With the way your medicine gets to you. I mean, if you just did a backwards transport list of how your insulin got to your refrigerator, you went and picked it up at the drugstore. It was shipped in on an air-conditioned vehicle. It was made in 5 different countries. It was flown in at temperature-controlled airplanes and stuff for certain items and that. And those planes run on a schedule, and they run perfectly. And the bags or the bottles the insulin's made, put in is made in another country. Everything all comes together like this giant funnel of all these logistics chains that come together, and then it narrows down and it spits out a bottle of vial of insulin that you put in your refrigerator. It's that easy. But it's not easy, is it? That chain could fall apart. What about the needle you put your insulin in with? How many processes does that go through to get in your medicine cabinet? So when you start looking at the things that are really important to keep you alive, and you do a back check on how did this get here in my kitchen cabinet? Well, there's a farmer, 3 countries away that grows some of the best hops, and then we go buy it. Oh, how do you afford that? Well, we transfer money, and we do this, and then we fly out there, and we pick the hops, and then we put them on a transport, and then they're sent, and they land over there, and then they're put on trucks, and then they're aged, and then they're done this. And by the time that beer ends up on your coffee table while you're watching the big game, it's gone through so many processes, the yeast, everything about it. So when that breaks, when everything breaks, even for a week, there is chaos. And it's not going to be one big thing. It might be, but it'll probably be just a bunch of stupid little things, and the house of cards falls down. And that is why I prep, because I care about my family. I don't care about all my neighbors. The good book says to care for your neighbor. And I know my neighbor. Actually, I know both of them by name. I've helped them and they've helped me. I take care of my neighbor. His neighbor, I don't care about. That's his problem. So, you know, we're all told that everything's great and kumbaya. But the reality is I don't care about too many people other than my neighbor and people in my family. And so that's will be my focus. And I guarantee you that that will be your focus too, because that's why we focus. And so all the expert gurus in prepping and bushcraft and survival, when that day comes, they're not going to, you know, rush over to Bob's house and see how you're doing. No, they're going to be taking care of their family. And that's why you get prepared, because your family, your friends, your team, or yourself are depending on it. So that's a real random kind of thing. And I had to talk a little fast because my throat keeps going out. I'm still recovering from the flu and a sore throat and a cough that hurts like crazy. I hope, I really, 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 really hope that this podcast video and everything worked out, because that would be awesome, because then I'd have a YouTube video and the radio show, and then I can, you know, like look really awesome, but I'm not. But anyway, I hope you guys all think about getting prepared. Look at the world around us. Look at France. Look at things that are going on in other countries, in Venezuela. Look at how that happened. Look at the food and the medicine you take, and check out how many processes that went through to get in your refrigerator or medicine cabinet. Look around and realize that it's fragile. It's not dangerously fragile, but everything is fragile. And therefore, you need to pay attention to it and go, what can I do to take out the fragility of my life? How can I be ready if things do goof up in my area, in my state, or in my country? And then prepare for that. It's that simple, really. I mean, there's a million and one things that could happen that could cause SHTF or a Teotihuacan event, but there's only certain ways you can deal with it, and that's what I just explained. Just be ready. Be ready for you and your family. It's that simple. Everything else is complicated, but it's simple. Staying alive is the number one rule of survival. Don't die. So figure out what it takes to keep you from not dying. Plan for it, prepare for it, and you won't die unless some crazy man shoots you. All right. On that note, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I hope I'm bringing something to you all each week. And let me know, let the radio station know. Say, hey, that Mark Boyle is just one crazy man. I like listening to him. I can't stand listening to him. Replace him, get rid of him, whatever. Let people know, because we, you know, at Contra Radio Network, put our hearts into these shows, and we really try to bring something of value to you. And like I've said in one of the podcasts or episodes, I like to talk in more abstract terms and go down the rabbit hole. John Jeffers is very to the point, and he brings up a lot of really good issues, and he does it in a different way. And then Prepping 2.0 with Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate bring a lot of expertise to the table. And I think between all three of them, you get a really well-rounded look or view of what you can do to be more prepared and more patriotic and more of a countryman to where you live. So thank you all for listening. I will talk to you all again next week. Adios, and have a good one.